the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show.
Buys in space!
I'm Julia.
I'm Alex.
And today our special guests are...
Cecilia Tan.
Kat Rambo.
And Matt Witesco.
Welcome, everyone. We're going to discuss bisexuality in science fiction and fantasy. Hooray!
Yay! We're visible this month, so you can hear us and see us.
Unlike all the other months when we're very, very stealth, the bisexual cloak of invisibility is strong.
We're like unicorn ninja.
All right, so first off, I'd love our guests to introduce themselves briefly. All of our regular listeners will know who Alex and I are, and I think we both ID as bi, which is exciting. But our guests, maybe the listeners don't know. So Cecilia, do you want to say a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Cecilia Tan, and I'm a longtime writer and editor of science fiction and fantasy, and my activism as a bisexuality visibility activist goes all the way back to the 1980s when I was in college, that was back in the days when the B wasn't yet in the sort of alphabet soup. Like L and G were the only two letters that were allowed in things, so we were kind of still putting the crowbar in the door and kind of, you know, horning that in. So, my school's LGSA didn't become the LGBA until after I graduated. And then now, of course, a couple more letters have been added. I basically have been putting bisexual characters in my science fiction and fantasy since all that time. And, and I'm also the editor and founder of Circlet Press, which is one of the only presses dedicated to erotic science fiction and fantasy, and bisexuality is one of the topics that we do a lot with, as you might expect.
Yes, so exciting. So, Kat.
Hi, I'm Kat Rambo. I am a writer and editor based in the Seattle area. I've had over 200 short stories published. My second novel is coming out late this fall.
Hooray! Yay! Uh-huh.
I'm a longtime volunteer with the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America and just started my second term as its president.
Yay!
And I first realized that I identified as bisexual when I went off to college, and it's one of the advantages of having survived several decades in this field has been seeing how things have changed over the course of time and generally gotten better. So that's it for me.
Awesome. And Matt?
Yeah, hi. So I'm Matt. I am a writer and voice director and game designer. So I primarily work in games. I'm not in the prose arts, unfortunately. So the game I work on that maybe the audience might have known the most is Zombies Run, which is a fitness game for which I do all the audio direction and used to do a deal of the writing. And at the moment I'm working on a board game adaptation of the same for which I'm doing all the writing. I realized there was a word for how I felt when I got to university, which is what we call college over here in the UK. And yeah, I guess that's when I kind of had a Lego piece click into the model of myself that made a lot more sense that way, which is when I started to identify as bisexual. I don't have any of the volunteering that all you people, I feel bashful about not being more active.
I don't think you need to feel bashful about that. Also, you are active. You're actively creating awesome content that some of the rest of us use on a daily basis.
That's good to hear.
Yes.
Yes, I love Zombies Run. I'm actually on a different podcast about The Walk, which is a different six to start game. And I got into Zombies Run after finishing The Walk, and I had never been a runner before, and then suddenly I'm a runner. So that's been 2 years now, and it's pretty much down to Zombies Run, so good job.
That's great to hear, and The Walk is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed working on that.
So, yeah, all of you have different experiences of discovering your identity or acknowledging your identity. Cecilia, you didn't really talk about when you... when you kind of came to that realization. And I don't know if that's something that you want to talk about or if your experience is different.
It's sort of a big ball of wax for me with sort of bisexuality and science fiction and whatnot, because it all goes back to, I think I was about 11 years old, and I was watching the news, you know, like sitting in the family room with my parents and, you know, whatever, like they're sitting on the couch, I'm sitting on the rug, we're watching that big TV. This is before we had a remote. That's how long ago it was. Like we had to go up, somebody had to sit near the TV to change the channel, you know, so my job, right? So I'm lying there and we're watching the TV news like after dinner or whatever, and I don't remember the exact context, but basically a news item came on about David Bowie playing a concert, I think, possibly. So, you know, I don't even remember what exactly the news item was, but at that point in the 1970s, early 80s, you know, I guess, let's see, if I was 11, yeah, so it was still just nominally the 70s. The name David Bowie was always prefixed by the word bisexual David Bowie. You know, like, you know, so it was like, you know, so it was literally like some straight-laced newscaster being like, you know, David Bowie, blah, 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 bisexual, blah, blah, blah. And I don't remember any of the rest of what was said other than the word bisexual popped up. And I was like, what? You know, and it was like my little antennas kind of went up and I was like, what? And the only other thing I knew about David Bowie was that he might be a space alien. And so sort of like, so for me, the connection between bisexuality and being a space alien and being David Bowie, essentially, you know, that was my first role model, you know, and my only role model then probably for the next, you know, 10 years. As far as I knew, the only bisexuals on the planet were David Bowie and me. And I was pretty sure that I was a space alien also. So that made perfect sense.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
I love this so much. This is amazing.
Well, I don't know. Like, all I can hear in my mind is like, notorious bisexual David Bowie.
Yeah, basically, you know.
Oh, wow. So all of you have talked a little bit about the content that that you create and putting some bisexual content into your fiction in various ways, I assume. Alex, do you want to talk a little bit about your experience with that too? Because I know you're also a novelist.
I can a little bit. Like, it's not something that I've gotten to really get into in the novels I've had published so far. There's a really awesome one that hasn't been sold yet that has bisexuals everywhere. Like, you can't throw a rock without hitting one, but somebody please buy this book from my agent. It would be amazing. And bisexuals, they can set people on fire. You know, like, how does it get better than that? But the one thing I did kind of want to bring up is just the sort of challenge, I don't know if it's even challenge is the right word, of conveying bisexuality to readers, particularly when we're talking about readers who may not want to notice that it exists. Like, you know, yeah, you kind of have to like stick their nose in it, I guess. Because I wrote a piece a couple of months ago kvetching about how there are still no queer characters in Star Wars that are on screen. Like, in the novels, we've got them, but not on screen. And I had all these people come out of the woodwork that were like, well, there shouldn't be romance in Star Wars, and without a romance, how would you know that anyone is queer? Maybe they're all queer. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm still having to have this argument with people. So, I mean, I would just like to hear everybody's take on that, because it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's still like a thing in progress for me trying to figure out how I want to depict it in my own work. Other than I'm just like, yeah, they're totally, you know, this character is totally checking out everybody. How's it not obvious?
I think that's a totally good question. And one of the things that my novels presented me with was the idea of how do you do a society where actually the majority of people are bisexual, where, you know, it's actually sort of more aberrant to be committed to one particular sex than not. And so how do you do it without sort of being like, sex, 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 right? You know, it's difficult. And I'm not even sure that I manage it, because the character that I love the best is my gladiator, who is constantly flirting and constantly arrogant and will bed just about anything that she can find.
Yeah, so that's kind of, that plays into some of the stereotypes that we get about bisexual people, which are often, and I'm also, my zodiac sign is Gemini, so I get it double. The idea that I, as a bisexual Gemini, I must be like the most fickle person possible, because the stereotype that Geminis and bisexuals just cannot commit to anyone ever, and they're just very promiscuous, and all we want to do is sleep with everyone. And I'm sort of like, on the one hand, like, well, there's no problem with that necessarily. But on the other hand, I am also married, so clearly I can commit.
Right. I mean, honestly, one of the reasons I write a lot of erotica is because it's one of the places where the sexuality of the characters is right up front and something that you have to put on the page, and you don't have to sort of try to slip it in somewhere, like, and she bisexually walked up to the counter to buy her latte, you know, or whatever. It's like, you know, it's one of those things where it can just be like the major focus. But it doesn't have to be. And then there's that whole thing of, I mean, even in real life, where, you know, it's like, how do you tell people you're bisexual, and when do you tell them? So it's like, if they've met you with your same-sex partner, they're going to make assumptions. If they meet you with an opposite-sex partner, they're going to make assumptions, you know, whatever. And it's like, do you just have to have a, wear the t-shirt all the time that says, no, really, I'm bisexual? I mean, you know, so it's just, I don't know. In fiction, at least, I can have some interior thoughts or, you know, whatever. And for me, some of it has been trying to figure out how to fit the word bisexual in, because sometimes, like, readers just won't believe it unless you actually come out and put that word in. Like, even though they are patently, you know, in a relationship that is the opposite gender of the person they were in a relationship of before or whatever, and people are like, well, doesn't that mean that they just changed from straight to gay? And I'm like, no, it doesn't. So, yeah, I'm trying to figure out, where am I going to put that word on the page? And, I mean, like, in Magic University, I have our main character declaring his major in sex magic, and they basically say to him, and can you fulfill the bisexuality prerequisite?
Oh, my God.
You know, so...
Amazing.
So good.
Yeah, you know, that, because I'm like, here, it's going to come in book two. Here's where I'm going to put it in, you know. And our hero, of course, says, of course I can, you know. so, you know, he's like, sure, why not, you know. So, yeah.
It's interesting kind of hearing all of your thoughts on this topic, primarily because what you just said about the interior thoughts of the characters being such a useful tool there, because when I was writing the Radio Abel part of Zombies Run, which was my primary writing job when I was writing for the game, I really struggled with one of those characters being bisexual, but because the game is entirely audio dialogue, there's no interior space to work with at all, so having to, you know, it was something I knew that I wanted to make obvious for the audience. It was important for me that one of those, well, that this character particularly was out as bi in the game. But writing a line of dialogue for the character to reveal that in a way that isn't just, hey, just so you know, or did I mention, bi guy over here, stood in the corner, being all bi, on your radio, it's me. Actually, kind of having to solve that problem made me realize a little bit of my own kind of internalized bias, I suppose, because I was really looking for moments to make it this big kind of neon sign, this is my sexuality being defined for you thing. But I realized that actually people talk about their past partners all the time, but I had been overlooking those moments of natural conversation because they were straight people talking about their past relationships. And the minute I thought of Eugene talking about his past relationships, it became this big capital Q queer thing going into my script, and it felt very different to me, and I had to kind of reckon with that bias, I suppose, or that prejudice kind of inside myself. And then once I'd kind of come round that, I just wrote a line of dialogue for him that was the same as anyone else talking about a past relationship, and it kind of fitted very nicely, and that was an interesting journey kind of coming around to that moment for me.
If I could develop on that a little, I'm another fan of Zombies Run, and to me, when I hit that moment in the game, it made the game feel very welcoming. And that is why, despite the fact that sometimes these moments feel kind of forced and labored, it becomes very important to have those representations in our stories.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And you couldn't be more right. I mean, while you were all talking, I was thinking about sort of when I realized and how I framed it originally. And I realized that the first time I heard the word bisexual was probably in Friends, when Phoebe sings a song about sometimes men love women, sometimes men love men. And then there are bisexuals, and some just think they're kidding themselves. And I kind of just realized that having that as the first piece of representation you encounter is really damaging. But in a different way, when you hear it in a kind of very normal context, it's very different.
No, there are two wonderful things here, like, that have come up. And one is the idea of representation and how important that is. And I feel like Cecilia's story of seeing David Bowie on TV and being like, that is me. I must also be an alien and bisexual, clearly, speaks to that. And also this idea that, like, we can see the damaging representation and have this idea, the ideas that are the bad stereotypes, which, so some of the ones that I've encountered are, that bisexual people don't exist, that bisexual people are very promiscuous always and cannot commit, that bisexual people are going to be, like, often gay people, the villain of the piece, they're going to murder someone, or they're going to be the victim of the piece and die. And that these are the only choices open. Those are really frustrating to see, but then when you find a situation like Kat was saying in the point in Zombies Run where you realize that Eugene is bi and you're like, oh, this is a place that I can exist. This is a world in which I could exist and be a person. And even in the zombie apocalypse moment, people like me can exist, is this wonderful thing. So I'm kind of wondering if everyone has other examples of times when you've seen a character that made you really happy.
I have one that I might fall outside the purview of the science fiction and fantasy, but it's been bringing me a lot of joy recently, is Daryl Whitefeather in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And I really have enjoyed that character's journey, because you meet him before he realizes for himself that he is bi. And also he's kind of an older man, and he's, you know, has a child and has a career, and is kind of, it's dealt with quite sensitively on the show. And it felt like a very real world person, honestly grappling with that kind of thing for themselves. And that felt really empowering to me watching it. And a lot of the things that he was expressing in the show, felt very real to me. And that was really lovely to see.
That's awesome. Anybody else have one that they want to bring up?
I want to bring up an older science fiction writer, because I encountered him when I was in my teens, and I think he was actually the first examples of gay, lesbian, or bisexual characters, and that is Thomas Burnett Swan, who had this wonderful landscape full of mythological creatures like minotaurs and dryads, and also people just having relationships with people, which is a, I don't know, it's a series that I come back to over and over again, because again, it was a landscape that, although when I was reading them, I didn't know why I felt so comfortable there. It really was a welcoming landscape.
I actually did a presentation at WisCon some years ago that was like the history of bisexual characters in science fiction and fantasy, and it was like a slideshow, and they put me in like one of the late evening slots, so we'd all been in the bar beforehand, so it was quite a rollicking good time, actually. What I expected to be like this really political presentation turned out to be like every new thing that appeared on the screen, people were like cheering for and stuff, which was kind of cool. But so the thing that's interesting is there have always been a lot of bisexual characters in science fiction and fantasy, often portrayed as villains or, you know, so forth, but I counted them all, basically good and bad, television, movies, you know, whatever, including some that were like, you know, well, you can argue with whether this is canonical bisexuality or if we're reading too much into it, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what I was interested in is that what really kind of gets me is it's so few of them are main characters. And so I think the first time I really felt like there was a main character who where it was right on the page, maybe was Kushiel's Dart by Jacqueline Carey. Phaedra has significant sexual and romantic attachments, passionate attachments to female characters and male characters. And then this also means that because she's the protagonist, that, that other female characters can have a kind of agency in her, in that storyline that they can't have if she's just heterosexual. You know, it's like every character she encounters has a potential to, you know, affect her story in the same way, as opposed to female characters must be relegated to the sort of friend or support character. You know, it's like they can be villains, they can be, you know, romantic attachments, they can be all these different things. And there are a bunch of great female characters who are villains, in fact, in that series, I think, because of that. And that was one of the things I thought was so significant about having Phaedra be a bisexual main character, is that that kind of opened the narrative possibilities of the for the entire cast in a way that I hadn't really thought about before.
That's a great observation. Yeah. I'd love to see that reading list.
I still have the slides somewhere. Yeah.
I think you should send them to us. Now we have this desire to know all.
Yeah, I'll dig it up. It might be posted on my blog somewhere, but that might have been the old blog. I'll look for it and I'll send you links if I can find it.
Yeah, I was trying to think of my bisexual favorite characters, and like the only one I can think right off the top of my head that I don't have like a complicated relationship with is Angela Montenegro on Bones, because she's just pure joy. But like my favorite character that's bi is Errol Vorkosigan. Mm-hmm. But the way he's there are so many problems with the way he's depicted, especially from the beginning of the series. It's just like, I love him, but God.
But I think that's a really good thing, to be able to point to things that you love and that do have problems and be able to love them anyway, because I think that all of us have our problematic faves, as the saying goes. But that doesn't mean that we can't get something out of the stories and the characters.
And I think that the interesting thing, like with Errol as a character, and I'm sorry if I'm gonna like have a Vorkosigan moment, is most of what makes his depiction really, really problematic at times is the way other characters address it. Like the infamous line where Cordelia is like, "Oh well, Errol used to be bisexual, but now he's married." Yeah, which I was just like, "Oh God, Lois, why?" I know it was like the 80s, but why?
It was just a phase.
Oh, no.
And then she like wrote an entire novel that was like the apology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I want to say in defense of Bujold and the folks of my generation, one of the things that you all should remember is like, for at least for me, growing up in Northern Indiana, the homosexuality was never shown on television. I mean, you know, like it wasn't that people were the villains. It was just that it was never goddamn shown. And, you know, my hometown had one gay bar. And, you know, in a lot of ways, how to remember, there's been a huge amount of progress. I mean, just the sort of the acknowledgement of the fact that there are people who are asexual or aromantic, and the fact that there are, you know, gender fluid, you know, just is like a whole bunch of stuff has come up within the last decade or so. And it's fabulous. But, you know, I think with a lot of the older writers, you got to give people chances to catch up.
And there is the whole, like, when it was at the time it was written. And I mean, I'm younger than you, but I remember like when it was like the biggest deal ever and they were talking about it on the news in a very negative light, when Roseanne was going to have a lesbian kiss in a bar. Ooh. And I mean, I graduated from high school the year that Matthew Shepard was murdered. So it is like there's been a phenomenal amount of change, which I think is why when you look back at some of the older stuff, it's there feels like a very weird disconnect.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, like, so Kat, I know you're a bit older than I am, but then if I've looked at, like, I often like to watch murder mysteries. That's one of my brain candy, sort of. I'm done with everything. I need to turn off my brain viewing choices, and a lot of the older mysteries from the 80s especially, but even on up into the 2000s and even now still, will have, like, either the plot will be that someone is gay or trans or bi or something like that, and that will cause them to either be dead or the murderer. And it's like part of the reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes these are really well written on the dialogue level, and I'm really enjoying like some of the aesthetic of them. And then this happens, and it always, every single time, just kind of feels like a kick in the gut. Which is why it's so nice to actually see things like Zombies Run, where it's like, it's a zombie apocalypse. There are lots of bad things happening to people, but it's not because of their orientation.
Right.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, I was going to, you know, until the day the zombies discover that bisexuals are like extra tasty, I don't know.
But one of the other things that I want to address really quickly is that Kat brought up that there have been a lot of changes, a lot of progress about recognizing different identities. And I think that's true. And one of the things that often frustrates me about identifying as bi is that sometimes I run into people who think that this is a very bigoted way to identify because it subscribes to binary gender, which I don't. I myself identify as non-binary. My definition of bi is that I'm attracted to people of my gender and other genders. And that's kind of not necessarily, there isn't necessarily a hard limit on what kind of gender I can be attracted to. But it is two kinds, mine and other. I don't identify personally as pansexual, which is a word that I hear a lot of people using, because to me specifically, and I understand that this is not how a lot of the people who do identify that way feel, and I totally support your choice to identify that way, if you do. But for me, the word pan means everything, and I feel like I'm not attracted to literally everything, so this doesn't feel right to me. But I defend anyone's choice to identify however you feel best suits you.
Yeah, I go along with that.
I taught a class recently with Cheryl Morgan on writing and gender, and she brought in a fabulous handout called The Gender Unicorn, which you could just Google on gender unicorn and find it. But it talks about how gender, you know, people are defined by gender identity, by gender expression, by sex assigned at birth, by who they are physically attracted to, and even who they are emotionally attracted to. So you have a really complicated sort of matrix of possibilities rather than that old binary, right?
Yeah, and I think that's great. There's another really good gender thing called My Gender Workbook, which gives you a lot of different possibilities to kind of open up to if you haven't actually explored that before. There was also this really wonderful web quiz that went around a while ago that was like, answer these questions and we'll tell you your gender. And all of the answers were different. My gender turned out to be the This Is Fine dog, where everything's on fire, but this is fine. And I was like, this is accurate. This is really how I feel about my gender.
So accurate.
The bisexual question is something that comes around again and again. And it's like, okay, I do support everyone's sort of ability to pick their own labels and, you know, so forth. And bisexual is the label that I picked. And I don't feel like a new generation of activists coming along gets to just tell me your label is no longer valid, you know, for one thing. And second of all, trying to explain to people the word bisexual to me, and I think to a lot of activists of my generation, doesn't mean we are saying there are two genders and we are attracted to two. What we are saying is that society provided us with these two categories. And what we are saying is that we don't agree with there being just these two categories. The only way to be between them is to, you know, the way language works, the only way we could come up with this was to say, was bisexual is the word. And you need a word that people will understand when you use it. Labels are useless if you have to stop and give a paragraph of explanation of what they mean. So, you know, it's like, I think the reason the word pansexual hasn't caught on more is because people are like, but what is that? And it's like, and then if you have to stop and explain what it is, then it hasn't caught on. You know, my undergraduate degree is in linguistics. So it's like, you know, whereas when you have a word that people are like, oh, at least they think they have the gist of what it means, that's how words catch on. So, you know, I'm like, some people may not like the word bisexual, but I think we're kind of stuck with it until something better comes along, and nothing better has come along that sort of expresses that identity for me. So I'm sticking with bisexual.
Pansexual always makes me think of Laurel K. Hamilton's panwares, and it can turn into all the different creatures, and then I just go off into werewolf land. It just does not work for me well as a term.
Well, and from a sexuality activist standpoint, pansexual in the 80s and early 90s didn't refer to people. It referred to events that were open to lesbians and gays and straights and so forth and so on. That if you held a pansexual activist group or a pansexual leather ball or something, then you knew that it was open to men and women and people of other genders and, you know, all different sexual identities were welcome there, is what that meant, as opposed to like a gay leather bar, which was basically a male space and, you know, so forth. So pansexual, the National Leather Association is a pansexual activist group, whereas, you know, the Lesbian Sex Mafia was a lesbian group, you know, that kind of a thing. Lesbian Sex Mafia is a, I didn't make that up. That's a real group, you know. So when people started applying the word pansexual to people, to themselves, it was like, okay, that's the sort of next obvious step, I guess, in the term, but it didn't work for me.
Tried to avoid jumping in just to say absolutely these things, yes. yeah, the point that bisexual is basically people of my gender identity and people of other gender identities was a real crucial it was nice to have that argument in my back pocket for if I ever got into that particular linguistic fight. Not that I ever have, but it certainly felt very true to me.
And I feel like that's kind of gotten into the same, not quite the same realm, but similar like linguistic battlefield as reclaiming the term queer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another loaded one.
I think that one's just going to get fought every 20 years, basically. Every time a new generation of activists comes along, they're going to be like, oh, but it was used as a slur. Yeah. Yes. Yes. You are beginning to grasp the point of why we use it. and, you know, and it comes back to that whole idea of you have to have a word that everyone knows what it means in order for a label to be useful. And queer as a catch-all term that included gay men and lesbians and bisexuals and trans people and, you know, et cetera, it was because only the language the oppressors used was universal. So, you know, because all of us couldn't vote by committee on something, you know, that's just, you know, that's not how if language was made by committees, it would be a lot simpler. Or maybe not. Maybe it would be 20 times harder. I don't know.
I think it's actually harder because in my experience volunteering for various queer organizations, and I'm saying queer, but like I know this offends some of the people who are in those organizations, what I found time and again is that every time we would try to find terms that would work for everyone, it would basically be impossible. And I'd eventually sort of like stick with something that I thought the majority of people were kind of into. But I would always know that no matter what I did, for a long time I was using quilt bag because that was very inclusive and easy to say. But there were always people who were like, I hate quilt bag. It sounds like an insult because it says bag, or it just reminds me
or
of
something.
A scrotum.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh my goodness.
Oh, no.
That's the first time I heard that objection. Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah, but that's some people are like, it's too cutesy or, you know, whatever. And I'm like, okay, so we should have a fearsome sounding acronym. I don't know. I just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, but this is the thing that I think has been lost in American politics overall. Every consensus requires somebody to not be getting 100% of what they wanted. And in order for any progress to be made in social justice or anything, a consensus has to be reached, and that always means that someone's gonna not get 100% of what they want because you have to meet in the middle. And if you feel like 89% of the people at your committee meeting are okay with queer, then the other 11% might have to either go off and start their own group or accept that they've been outvoted for once, you know? So, I mean, that's the sausage making difficult part about activism, is that while you try to take care of everyone's needs and you try not to do damage to people, consensus always requires somebody to be on the edge.
Yeah. I think that's true of so many things, even beyond activism, right? It's any large organization, anytime you get a group of people.
Oh, I don't know how you would feel about that as the president of CIFWA Cat.
Oh man, that's a can of worms I don't think we should open. That said, I really think that one of the things that I find helpful in that situation is always to try to respect any individual's preference for their own identity. And so if someone tells me I don't want to be called queer, then I'm not going to call them queer. Even if I think as a blanket term, this works to encompass a larger community that I'm part of and maybe they are part of as well.
Right.
Okay, so I have a question since we're talking about language stuff, you know, kind of coming back into writing, particularly when we're talking about like science fiction or near future or far future or whatever, or fantasy worlds, you know, are we better off taking in these terms, even though it occasionally might get us yelled at by various readers who don't like it, or, you know, listeners, or, you know, do you make up your own, or do you go with the concept that, well, it's a fantasy universe, so everything is so different anyway that they don't need to have a term, or, you know, kind of, where do you go with that?
You should do whatever you want, but you should not be constrained by worrying about how people will receive it. You should, you know, sir, if you are willing to stand by it, right, like if you construct something to be as hurtful as possible, you better be prepared to stand by your conviction that this is an important thing to do. But I think for the most part, as writers, and particularly as speculative fiction writers, we should be pushing the boundaries. We should be questioning these constructs. We should be constantly engaging with them in a variety of ways.
Yeah. I love making up words. I mean, one of the things I love about science fiction and fantasy is that I can make the rules. You know, I can make my own societies. I can make, you know, things where the norms are different. And that gives me a space to play with bisexuality in a way that, you know, where I'm not always trying to fit it into the modern political context. I am, as it turns out, writing a lot of like urban fantasy and whatnot now, or, you know, near future cyberpunk and whatnot, where I do have to grapple with the modern political context. But yeah, I love world building stuff where I can be like, oh, and, you know, I'll spend a whole day trying to come up with a new word, you know, for, yeah, some kind of sexuality or something, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a great privilege to have such a broad playground within which to make sort of safe spaces for people to see themselves in, if you see what I mean. Because you can just knock down all those barriers that exist in our world. And I think it's also kind of, it's great when you can find space to give people a kind of a hook to hang their hat on, as it were. So, as we were saying earlier, when people sort of explicitly say the word bisexual or define that very clearly, even if it is in a very different setting, yeah, creating that space for it to be a normal thing, no matter how non-normal the setting might be, can be really powerful.
Yeah, and I mean, as a writer, I've definitely written bisexual characters before, and the one that's the most overt is in a fairy tale retelling that I did of Hansel and Gretel, where it's far future from the original time of the story, and Gretel is living with her brother, who is now a cat, and she's lived for a very long time. And basically, I never use that word. I never say what her orientation is, but it's very much about her relationships, and there's a lot of jumping back and forth in time. And it's clear, it's very clear that she has a history. So I kind of did the thing that Matt was talking about doing with Eugene, where it's like, well, you're looking at her history of who she's been with, and it's clearly not all one gender. So that is, I don't know how to be more explicit than that. But I think, like, I didn't consciously set out to avoid using any kind of language when I did that, but it felt more natural to me to not actually have to talk about it in labeling terms, I guess. So I think that what I'm taking away from all of your answers and from my own experience and applying how I felt is that doing what feels the most natural for your story is probably the best thing to do.
Yep. Yep.
So I think it's about time for us to wrap this conversation up. It has been so awesome talking to all of you. I would like to end with one closing question for all of you, and I'm including Alex in this. I would like you to tell me if you could think of one thing that you'd like to see in the future that has anything to do with bisexuality in science fiction and fantasy. Let me know what that is, and let the rest of our listeners and other writers out there know so that maybe someday someone can fulfill this wish for you. And also tell us what you have out there that we should be looking for. I'm going to put Alex on the chopping block first.
Oh, I see how it is. Well, what I would like to see out there is just more main characters who are explicitly bisexual. Because, you know, we still have a hard time thinking of a whole lot of them, and it is a very welcoming experience because there are more of us than you realize. We're just normally invisible. And also I've actually been kind of thinking about moving slightly away from just like books and into thinking about games, that it feels like more and more lately games and video games have been trying to make more space for PCs to be kind of blank slates that allow you to define the character as bisexual for yourself, which I also think is really cool, but it would be also super awesome if there were, you know, like an RPG where the character, you know, the main character is just bisexual and hey, gamer bros, you can fucking deal with it. Cry more. Your tears are delicious. Yes. And then if I'm going to, you know, toot my own horn on stuff, everyone should go buy my novel. It's called Hunger Makes the Wolf. It came out this year, and the sequel to it is coming out in February of next year. It's called Blood Binds the Pack.
And the author name on that is Alex Wells, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. Why is everybody better at promoting my shit than I am? I just need to practice.
Awesome. All right, Matt, how about you?
Well, actually, I'm going to piggyback a little bit off Alex's point about games. One thing I would love to see more of in all media, but in games specifically, is an expression of how your bisexuality and characters' bisexuality can present in different ways depending on the people they are interacting with. So in games, the default is basically you can pursue the quest line to hook up with any of the characters you like. And by definition, if you do that with people of different genders, then, hey, your character is now bi. But I think the way characters relate to other characters can be affected or can change in other ways that aren't just involved in a kind of romantic liaison or a sexual liaison in any kind of way. You know, it's always the slightly cheesy moment in where, you know, a male character joins a female character in checking out a hot guy. And those things don't often present in games specifically because your identity only exists when you're interacting with one person. So I'd like to see it become more of a broader reality for characters beyond just the romantic aspects of games, I think. That would be much more true to life, I think. And the thing that I'm working on at the moment is Zombies Run, the board game, which will be coming out in December, and of which I'm very proud, and I would like it if as many people as possible bought it and played it.
Awesome. What about you, Kat?
Well, I absolutely agree. I'd like to see more bisexuals represented, but I also would like to see more acknowledgement that as we move into the future and as society changes, stuff about gender will continue to change. Roles will continue to shift and slide, and there may be patterns and behaviors that we haven't even reached yet. Stonewall was less than 50 years ago, right? We're rounding up on the 50th anniversary, and I think we'll keep seeing changes, you know, perhaps more revolutionary acts like that. And
that through our writing we can be part of that change and certainly facilitate and shape and continue to move things along. As far as shilling my own stuff, I have two recent short story collections. One is called Neither Here Nor There, a two-sided fantasy story collection. I have Altered America, Steampunk Stories, which is, I believe you could guess, steampunk stories. I have a novel coming out in late fall, Hearts of Tibet. I run a series of classes, including you just introduced a class on writing and gender via the Rambo Academy for Wayward Writers. And I have a Patreon if you're interested in getting my short stories. And if you're a CIFWA member, you should check out our forums and see all the cool shit that we have coming. There, I'll stop there.
Okay. And Cecilia?
Let's see. What I want to see with bisexuality in science fiction and in literature in general in the future is, I guess, I mean, just more. I want to see more of it. I want to see more main characters. I want to see more side characters. I want to see more, you know, realistic representation, I guess, is one way to put it, in that, you know, the bi character doesn't always have to be the crazy one on the team who comes up with the nutty ideas, or, you know, sort of, because that sort of reinforces stereotypes and whatnot. And I guess, you know, the message overall is don't just use whole classes of people as stereotypes that allow you to, you know, stick more stereotypes into your story, you know, represent people as three-dimensional characters who have motivations of their own beyond what their quote-unquote label is supposed to carry, right? And that goes for whether you put representation of people of color or different genders or anything, but since this one's about bisexuality, we'll say bisexuality in particular. You know, so yeah, but just because the more the merrier. And you never know when you're gonna write that one character that someone out there, you know, connects with and, you know, literally save people's lives at times where they feel alone, like they're the only one, and then they find someone in a book who is more real to them than real people, and it, you know, it can really change somebody. As far as what I've got coming up, my next big thing with a lot of bisexual characters is going to be, I'm starting an urban fantasy series with Tor called The Vanished Chronicles. And the book one is called Initiates of the Blood, but it won't be out till next year. Whereas the next new thing I have, actually, it's not science fiction. I have a gay Navy SEAL billionaire abduction romance coming out.
Amazing.
Christmas themed gay Navy SEAL billionaire abduction romance.
Wow.
Coming out. Yeah, coming out from Riptide Publishing. It's part of their Christmas charity bundle. So it'll be out in November. I don't think the pre-order page is up for that bundle yet, but it's called Watch Point, so it'll be out soon. And but yeah, there's not much bisexuality in that one because it's mostly two guys on a rocky island in Maine, and, you know, which is how I like it. you know, yeah. So, but yeah, the next big thing will be the Tor urban fantasy series next year, because that, and everyone in that's bisexual, basically. I mean, literally all the characters. So pretty much all my characters are bisexual unless proven otherwise. So you can just assume that about all of my books.
Yeah, and if you are interested in reading something that's out right now in fantasy that contains a lot of bisexuality, you can pick up the Magic University books, because those definitely have plenty of both fantasy and bisexuality.
and polyamory and you know, alternative relationship structures and, yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Okay, well, thank you all so much for talking to me and to Alex today. It has been a wonderful, wonderful conversation, and I kind of wish it could go on for hours, but I know we all have lives.
Well, speak for yourself.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Well, until next time, listeners.
You're welcome, citizens. You're welcome.
Excellent.
thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Chronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.